Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and sermon from our January 3rd service. Reverend Bodie's sermon topic is, "And Darkness Was on the Face of the Deep." Thanks for listening.
My sermon this morning at the beginning of this new year will have to do with beginnings and with the creative process itself. And in that sermon, I'm going to be referring to the most well-known story of beginnings in our culture, namely the first creation story from the book of Genesis. I'm going to be referring it to it not for its science, but for its process, for the creative process that I see involved in it. As it happens, there are two very different creation stories in the opening chapter of the book of Genesis. I have with me the Hebrew Bible, which, Nan, you'll be interested to know, I used to know how to read this. Now I can hold it the right direction, at least. But that begins from the what we would call the back of the book, and the lines read the other way. But there are two creation stories there at the beginning that are back-to-back, and normally they're just read as one. Scholarship has clearly indicated and shown that they are two very different stories from different times. And the first story is the opening one from Genesis 1, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 4a. Which is interesting because you need to know that why would you divide it there? All right. You need to know that the verses and the chapters of the scriptures, both the Hebrew and the Greek, weren't verses and chapters in them. The chapters were added in the 13th century of our era, and then the verses in mid 16th. Century, but the original text did not have them, and they're quite arbitrary the way they seem sometimes to be divided. It's been suggested actually that the person who divided them was riding in a buggy carriage on a very bumpy road. So that's why I say the 7-day creation account, which is the most recent of the two. It culminates with the creation of humans, male and female, together, and that goes from chapter 1 through 2, verse 4a, and then begins the second creation account, more ancient, more primitive, that's the Garden of Eden account, and there, that starts with the creation of the human male, then the planting of the garden, and then the creation of the beasts and birds, and finally, the creation of woman out of the rib of the male. Now, in my younger years, when I was expected to take these Genesis stories literally, they gave me a fair amount of mental and emotional anguish. But long ago, I gave up worrying about their scientific credibility. And so now I approach these stories with a great deal of delight. What I'm seeking, as I indicated, is psychological understanding and historical insight into a bygone historical era. I'm going to read the first creation story. I'll read it fairly quickly because it's a bit lengthy. But I'm reading it in the King James Version from 1611, the first English version. And I'm reading it from that archaic version because it gives an archaic flavor to the story. You're less tempted, I think, to try to take it in a modern scientific way. So as I read the story, I imagine the Creator God being like a human sculptor at work, laboring over these unformed materials that are at hand. Here we go, Genesis 1 through chapter 2, verse 4a. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas, and God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And so it was. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creatures after his kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth was finished, and all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created. And then picks up that second creation story in which Adam is created from the dust of the earth. A whole different story. In the beginning. Those are the first three English words of the Hebrew Scriptures. And the human mind is, it seems, naturally drawn to beginnings. There's a natural human urge to trace things back and back and back, to try, if possible, to get at the root of things. Because there's a sense that if you know the beginning of something, you know what something's about, you know how you can deal with it, you have ground upon which to stand. There's just one problem with this invitation to trace things back to the beginning. You never ultimately get there, because you will always be able to ask yet another question about the beginning and what preceded that beginning. So for this is what you call an infinite regress. It would simply never end. The search for beginnings leads to a never-ending infinite regress. Just take, for example, with a question about the beginning of the cosmos. A long way down that road, you may say, here finally is where space and time began. Here is where the Big Bang started. This is the zero point. But then the troubling questions, if you have the courage to ask them, what were the conditions out of which time and space began? What was it that preceded the Big Bang? And perhaps you've heard some humorous stories about this from more primitive cosmologies, such as the cosmology that I'm dealing with this morning in the biblical story of Genesis. That's a cosmology in which the Earth is understood to be a flat, circular disk covered by a dome, and the whole thing is resting on pillars, all of which is fine, I suppose, as far as it goes, but then the inquiring human mind wants to ask, well, what were those pillars resting on? And of course, the answer is that the pillars are resting on large stones. And the mind asks, and yes, and the stones now, those are resting on the broad backs of elephants. Yes. Elephants. Thank you. And about those elephants. Oh, about the elephants. The elephants are resting on the large round back of the turtle. The turtle. Oh, you wonder about the turtle. Here's the thing. It's turtles all the way down. Another way of talking about this is to say that in the search for beginnings, the rational mind is shown its limits. The rational mind cannot get beyond the structure by which and through which it grasps reality. The rational mind cannot investigate the ground of its own being. It can't account for the presence of being itself, for why there is being rather than non-being, for why there is something rather than nothing. At some point, the rational mind must simply stop before the reality of that which always was, is, and will be. It must stop before that which is other than and prior to its own categories of cause and effect. Those are the categories that lead you to that infinite regress. So on this first Sunday of January, where we mark beginnings, we might begin by recognizing that any beginning of which we speak is at some point arbitrary. So whether we choose to begin with the birth of a year, or of a decade, or of a century, or of a species, or a planet, or a galaxy, or even of the universe itself, there is always a certain arbitrariness to it. Because with respect to any given birth, you can always ask the question of a prior birth, which leads ultimately to the question of how it is that there was anything at all in the first place to give birth to anything at all in the first place. And thus, for us, any beginning is always in the middle of things. The Latin term in media res, in the middle of things. But though we always stand humbly, as it seems to me, before this ultimate cosmological question, perhaps we can say something about the creative process itself. And if we know something about the creative process itself, that may acquaint us in some way with the ultimate power of being / becoming, out of which we have emerged, back into which we fall, and of which we are always a part. I say, if we can know something about the creative process, we can acquaint ourselves with the ultimate being / becoming. So let me, on this first Sunday of the new year, speak of two elements in this creative process. And I'm using this book of beginnings, this book of Genesis in the Hebrew Scriptures, to illustrate this process. I'm taking this ancient story of beginnings as a general formula for beginnings. So I'm not looking for the science here, which is way out of date with our current science, but perhaps they also were not as concerned about science, and so perhaps could get at what the creative process was. So how does it begin, and how can we speak about it? We're joining it in the middle, 13 billion years, you might say, in the middle. Well, here's how the Genesis story starts. First two verses, which I read earlier. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Now, there's a very interesting and probably unanswerable textual question here, namely, are we talking about creation that is out of nothing? Creatio ex nihilo, another Latin term. Or did the Creator God in this story have pre-existing materials with which he was working? Namely, that chaos. Was that something that the Creator God created? Or did the chaos already exist there as pre-existing materials from which the creation then began? Now, so there, whatever you decide on that has very different philosophical implications I can't go into that right now, but ask me afterwards if you want. So my point here is whatever conclusion you might come to on whether there was pre-existing materials or not, at the beginning of the creative activity, before any creation could take place, there is no form and there's no differentiation of any kind. There's only this formless void, this waste, this chaos. How that chaos came to be, how that pregnant nothingness came to be, we can't say. But looking back, what we can say is that in the beginning, there was no ground upon which to stand, nothing growing out of the ground. The original waters there in that early beginning, if you remember, they had, everything was water, and there was no form, no shape, nothing to give it any shape or form, just water, water everywhere. Well, water and darkness, actually. No light at all. Pitch black darkness, cave black darkness, black hole black darkness. Darkness upon the face of the deep, says the story. Deep, dark water. Submerged in water, turning and twisting in amniotic fluid. Unconscious, unaware. This is how it is in the beginning, says this story of beginnings. This is how it is prior to birth, before creation. No awareness, no consciousness, nothing to see, nothing to get a handle on. And if you're a writer, the paper is blank. And the mind is blank. There's no actual thought, idea, understanding, or direction. There is potentiality only. Additionally, everything's all mixed together. There's no recognizable form, chaos. There is no differentiation. That's how it is in the beginning of this creative process as you look back upon it. Now then, however, there is some movement in the creative process, for we read, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. Movement in the darkness and in the formlessness and in the sleepiness. A stirring. A shifting, a little breeze, a gentle wind begins to blow. It's the Spirit of God upon the deep. It's the Spirit of creativity moving upon the face of the waters. In other words, into your blankness, into your slumber, into your torpidness, into your state of unknowing, there is a whiff of something, a breath, a little movement, a possibility, and even a little light. Out of the darkness of unconsciousness, out of the womb of unknowing, out of the realm of deep sleep, some light. And with that light, then, is the first differentiation in that darkness and in that chaos, the first division of things, and it's the division between light and dark. That's the first pair of opposites. And that's a signal, when you get to the pair of opposites, that's a signal that the creation has begun, because creation always means division. It means separation into this and into that. The wholeness is divided. The formless void is divided. That's the beginning. And then after that, another division. Now this is a huge and crude division. Something comes into that watery void. There's a divider placed into the void. We read, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters that divides the waters from the waters. Now firmament. How many of you use that in your everyday language? Not so much. I grew up with it in relation to these creation stories. I didn't know what it meant through the whole of my youth, childhood and youth, but later I discovered what firmament meant. And to understand it, you have to put yourself back into this more primitive cosmology that I've been talking about, this tripartite cosmology in which the entire universe consists of the dome of heaven, the flat circular earth, and then the waters under the earth, with pillars perhaps too, all right? So that's what you have there. And that dome, it's like on a cake, imagine a flat cake pan with a dome, a clear dome there, okay? A clear solid dome, and that's where the moon and the sun and the moon and the stars are hung. And that then, but before they're hung there, this firmament, that's the dome of heaven. That's what firmament means. That's placed into this watery chaos. It divides the waters from the waters. So you've got the waters that are underneath that dome, out of those the dry land is formed. And then you've got also the waters that are over the dome. And when it rains and when it pours, you are being soaked with the waters that have come through the windows in the dome of heaven. And that's a biblical phrase that I grew up with also. It says in the story of Noah, when chaos again engulfed the creation, it says in that tale that all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, so the waters coming up from underneath, and the windows of heaven were opened. It all comes down upon you. That's the flood story. That's a story for another time, however, because we're talking not about the destruction of creation this morning. We're talking about the creation and the elements of it. So here in the beginning, you now feel yourself making your first headway in this dark, watery void. A division is taking place, a great division, some kind of divider rising out of the water, something that before was completely unconscious now begins to be crudely conscious, a parting of the waters. Water, of course, is a symbol for the unconscious, potentiality only, nothing actual yet. But something actual is starting to emerge from the water. Some differentiation takes place, and then more differentiation, for we read, "Let the waters under the heaven, under the dome, be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. So now there's more differentiation. Dry land, earth, a place to stand. And now creation can take place in earnest, with all the different forms and shapes and plans, gradual, simple at first, but becoming increasingly complex. The dome of the heavens can be hung with lights. The disk of the earth can become green with vegetation and all the creatures that live on that vegetation. And the seas, similarly, can be filled with living things of all kinds. And the air under that dome of heaven can be filled with spectacular winged creatures of all different shapes and colors. So, this is the beginning of beginnings. First, the chaos of the formless void. Secondly, the first stages of differentiation. And then thirdly, moving toward the more finely differentiated. And that, I say, is enough for the beginning of this new year, enough for the beginning of a new creative cycle. It's enough to know that creation does not happen instantaneously. It's enough to know that chaos is a necessary element in creation. It's enough to know that much may be going on beneath the surface and in the darkness. It's enough to know that we may become aware of a creative process long after it is already underway. It's enough to know that we may someday be conscious enough to cooperate with and to be partners with this creativity that has birthed this. And finally, it's enough to know that patience may be useful, that trust may be helpful, and that this new year may be interesting in ways we might never, ever dream about. So I say Happy New Year to all of you. Our special music, as I indicated, by Akui is titled Fantasy by Mozart. I had asked her at 7:15 this morning, do you have anything about the creative process? And listen, this is what she came up with.